I'm going to start with some poems about St. Louis, I guess, or at least a lot closer to home than where we ended up with the dolphins. The first poem I'm going to read is called In the Suburbs. In the suburbs, I meet no one. No old man sunning himself on an uncomfortable bench, pretending to read the paper. No bored, underpaid office worker chewing a dry sandwich. No pasty-faced waitress in a tired uniform. No lovers stumbling to a rendezvous. Nobody's aunt devoured by fear of cancer. No bankrupt, no stockbroker, no owner of a small business. No factory worker in a blue shirt. No child and dog, partners in a dance, careless in its choreography. No cat washing itself. No prowl car nosing along the curbstone. I, too, become invisible in the suburbs. I think I have made a landing on the streets of an alien planet, curving and recoiling to infinity, to the twittering accompaniment of a chorus that repeats measure after measure without variation of a music virtually intolerable to the human ear. I'm trying to keep my introductions down to a minimum, but I'll only say that this poem was not written during the recent newspaper strike. It was written during an earlier one, but I think it applies any old time. It's called What Happened During the Newspaper Strike. For more than 47 days now, the stars have kept quiet, refrained from advising me to start a new romance, or if the time is propitious for business ventures, stopped their incessant twittering about me and my affairs, and the affairs of the twittering multitude. In that sudden, vast silence, I imagine the astrologers looking up, puzzled, to find the stars glittering jewel-like as before, on the enormous black bosom of the night. The comics persist in launching their urgent balloons. Wham, zap. Our world cannot impinge on the reality of those arduous fictions. When we come back, they won't have noticed our absence. From box to box, they advance, relentless as robots set in motion by an idiot thumb pressing the wrong button. Where they're feeling the pinch is in the bars where the reporters used to go after work. Now there is no work and no reporters. They are all in the suburbs observing the stars or drinking beer in front of the glimmering tube that brings them news of the news. Needless to say, the wars continue. There is no end to that old story, crying peace when there is no peace, etc., for the old war drags on as before. Births, marriages, deaths, transfers of property, who will take note of them? My eye must be on the sparrow, on the wheel within the wheel, its comings and goings, its countless revolutions, so that nothing will be overlooked, so that nothing will be cast aside, so that nothing will be forgotten. Down the dirty street, dawn meets its end. A trumpet sounds above the wind, a mournful foreign cry. Someone is getting it, America. The hostages are being hustled toward the plane. The masked gunman is holding up the bank. The government buildings are being taken over by the military. The cops are shooting at the fleeing suspect. The suicide is launching himself from the bridge. The fire is gutting the warehouse. Down the dark streets, someone has been getting it for more than 47 days now. The next poem, I thought it was going to be spring, too, so that's why I decided to read this one. It's called The Roots of Revolution in the Vegetable Kingdom. The blonde witch with her wand of water is out there stirring up the teeming earth. A soft cap of cloud is pulled low over her eyes. She steps delicately between the rows on dirty feet. Nothing escapes the soft sprinkling of her attention. Not even the broccolis are safe. The cauliflowers thinking themselves invisible in their green tents. Even the carrots, their soft, blunt noses busy with underground nuzzlings, cannot ignore her. Spinach with its leafy arms, asparagus all thumbs and feathers, lumpen potatoes, onions and radishes, she rouses them all. Her repeated provocations have disturbed them. See how they spring up from the spongy soil. And the weeds she prods into life with her pokings and pryings, how they thrust and sprout, festering like disease. The vegetables are taking over, demolishing fences, obliterating property lines. Let there be no more owners and no more ownership, no more plats, lots, liens, mortgages. Let there be no property, even in the suburbs. Let there be only the earth and the seeds and the harvests thereof. I thought I'd read some poems about Mexico, since we like to go there. A couple from my book and some new ones. The first one is called Firewood. Let me begin with a stick, gnarled and arthritic as the limb of a beggar, frayed at the end like rope, dark at the core, nibbled by needle teeth, dry with bark, scaly as a lizard. I think I can read in it how hard it is to live, and how every morning the sun creates himself all over again and crawls awkwardly over the rim of the world. Two, since the first day of the world, this man has been walking with his load of firewood to sell it. Exhibiting the ruins of his shirt, he opens a hard palm to the husband. In his mouth, that smiling black hole, a few teeth lean drunkenly like tombstones. Three, the thin blue smoke disappears into the dry air, leaving behind the odor of hunger, which is the incense of the poor. The next one is called Bread, and I wrote it. There was a fiesta in the town where we lived, where suddenly one morning when we came out into the streets, hundreds of little booths had been set up, and they were all selling marvelous loaves of bread in the shape of swans and guitars and baskets of flowers and all kinds of unimaginable things. It was the anniversary of bread, the bread celebration. On that day, everything was bread. Mattresses, pillows, blankets, chairs, windows. Wanting to look out, a child chewed a hole in the bread pane. The musicians played instruments of bread. The mayor unveiled a bread monument in honor of bread. People came from every corner of the republic, laughing and pushing, crowding in the streets. A busload of pickpockets emptied itself in the square. Everyone wanted the bread that thrust up on long stalks from the ground or hung down on strings from the sky. This bread was of three kinds: yellow, with raisins like little black buttons, or pink as the sunset, or white as a girl's veil at her first communion. It made no difference. The people ate it all. Riding out into the dusk, the buses were filled with bread. The roads were lined with bread. The people waved goodbye, goodbye to the bread. They were chewing and laughing. In the deserted streets, maybe one or two were left lying asprawl, pillowed in a doorway, dead drunk on bread, under stars clustered thick as raisins. The next two are also about Mexico. They're new poems. The first one is called Isla Mujeres, which means the island of women. It's the name of an actual place where people who can afford it go to lie on the beach. Isla Mujeres, I speak of the south. I speak of pale sand fringed with palm and bamboo. I speak of the amniotic waters of the south. Sappho might live here in a simple hut with floor of beaten earth on goat cheese and fish. I speak of a black storm blowing in, rattling the toothed swords of the palms, strafing the road of crushed shells, and an arrow of lightning pierces the sky. An ancient deity returns to earth in a single instant of illumination. The last one of this group is called Leaving Mexico One More Time. Not the branch that taps at the window, offering a single scarlet pomegranate. Not the grove of green feathers. Not the bird with wings of flame. Not the thin thread of smoke. Not the blue sky clouded with clouds. Not the lion-colored desert sleeping under a scratchy blanket. Not the 400-year-old walls crumbling at the side of the road. Not the huge, sad trees that stand in black pools of shadow. Not the acrid, unmistakable coffee smell. Not the clatter of the great bells like tumbrils rolling over the cobbles, nor the heap of yellowing bones with clumsy, knobbed ends, nor the long twilights, needle-pricked with sulfur-yellow patterns, nor images of España, nor the three tall cypresses bending and swaying toward one another like black-shawled gossips, nor the old granny with eyes black as prunes, nor the withered pod, nor the dry seat of hunger, not the simple broom of twigs scraping the stones with a sound older than civilization. Leaving Mexico One More Time precipitates a sensation heavy and cold as stone, because from now on, something will always be missing. Then I thought I'd read one, for obvious reasons, called Snow, although one might have hoped we'd left that behind us for a while. Snow. Upstairs, they are shaking cold feathers from thousands of pillows again. This is the same snow that falls on my childhood out of the pages of the Brothers Grimm, over Fräulein's little house, carved all over like a cuckoo clock. The same snow hardening at curbside into walls, towers, battlements, hanging white beards on venerable buildings. Snow solid as marble under a frozen sky. And the same snow on Jungfraujoch, when after a dinner of spiced red cabbage, we marched through the tourist tunnel into the glacier's glittering heart. Snow on the roof of the world. Snow from Alaska, Siberia, the poles. Snow on New England, on the hills of Kentucky. Snowplows airlifted to Cincinnati. Snowdrifts in the streets of Memphis. When the wind comes in, hugging the ground, the snow rises and swirls in every direction, like the snow in the glass globe of childhood. I started thinking about my own childhood and wrote some rather self-indulgent poems, I guess. This one is called Baked Potatoes. What I was really thinking about was how when you're away from home, you tend to think that everything at home is still going on the way it did when you were there, even though you may know, as I do, that it isn't. Baked Potatoes. I like to think of it all going on without me, as if it were a wind-up toy like my brother's mechanical train on its oval track, an engine, a coal car, two passenger cars, a caboose, going over the little bridge and through the tunnel, around and around when you wound it with a key to stop at the painted tin station. I like to think that back there, Dad is driving the Oldsmobile up the West Side Highway in rush hour. The river is pewter with facets of mother of pearl and highlights of salmon. He squints through his glasses and grumbles at the traffic, impatient to be home with the evening sun. On Saturday, Mother draws on gloves of glacé kid, preparing for her assault on the department stores. Invincible, she advances on Fifth Avenue. Riding home in the bus through the dusk, she wonders if Maggie remembered to put the potatoes to bake. I imagine Maggie is dreaming, adrift at the window, leaning into the blue twilight, unaware of the surprises life is preparing for her. I think of the baked potatoes, their coarse brown jackets, their steaming, mealy centers awash with butter that Maggie will carry to the dinner table, as if back there it is all going on without me. I'll just read a couple of short ones to close. One is, I call it portrait, but it's really a self-portrait. I didn't want to call it that. Portrait. Trespasser in my own house, my own alter ego, I'll never catch myself. I'd steal my own treasures, the little ring, the silver ring set with a carnelian, the little book bound in tooled leather. I arrange myself like an odalisque on the model's throne and dare them to paint me. Some days, I impersonate myself and walk in the city, collecting wolf whistles and propositions. I look for myself in the supermarket, among the stout mamas, in the odor of oranges and bananas. In a crazy quilt of weeds, I invade my own backyard. Not even the dog knows me. And the last one I'll read is called The Invention of Zero. I was fascinated when I discovered that zero was invented by the Arabs. And, of course, it is what made calculus possible and all that stuff that I don't understand. The invention of zero. Without it, nothing exists. Thinking of those ancient mathematicians in their skin tents, bending dark Semitic faces in the odor of goat turds and camel dung to decipher the hermetic universe, those venerable magi whose fastidious fingers dissected out this pearl of nothing, this naught, nil, nihil, this iridescent bubble of wisdom, hollow at the core, this insubstantiality, this absence, this egg of being, I am amazed anew at the inexhaustible fertility of the natural world. Thank you.